Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this one was one when it caught my eye and quite amused me, I must say. The headline is, "The South African Communist Party is unfazed by the decision to ban it from ANC election strategy meetings." Now, this is in the wake of the SACP earlier this year saying that it was going to contest elections in the next local government elections, I presume against the ANC, because it felt like it needed to make its voice heard in the electoral landscape and that the ANC wasn't properly giving it its due inside the alliance. Now, the SACP has promised this many, many times in many elections, but then have barely ever gone through with it. I think they've only stood in one municipality before. But generally speaking, it looks like they are a little bit more serious about it this time. And they were apparently thrown out of one of these discussion meetings in Mpumalanga when ANC Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane said that she had chased away SACP members from the party's electoral meeting in Mpumalanga, saying, quote, "The ANC will not be Zoomified, where you sit with people who are going to contest and target the same constituency as you, planning with you on how to make sure your candidate is the best candidate. There is nothing untoward and we will continue doing it." The SACP says the fact that the ANC is unwilling to have our comrades in their meetings where they are discussing their election strategy is not abnormal. The only thing unusual is that those comrades went through the invitation of the ANC and the ANC made a mistake to invite them, was the response from the SACP. Apparently, the National Working Committee of the ANC has told the media sort of off the record that the ANC had warned the SACP that it could suffer the same fate as Jacob Zuma should it choose to contest the next local government elections. Terence, you know, this has been bubbling away now for a few months. Do you think that they're serious? And secondly, what do you make of this little episode here?
Well, I think for the SACP, this seems to be a case of something to do with cake and eating it. Although they don't believe in having things, so maybe you can't really use that. But, you know, you get the point. You know, if they have made a decision to stand independently, then they are by implication standing against the ANC, unless there is some sort of agreement that, you know, they'll split lists or something. But the SACP has done remarkably well out of a democracy in which it has, as you said, I think only on one occasion ever put its name on a ballot. So yeah, you know, I think that that if it is demanding a particular policy course, then it needs to you know, man up, person up, whatever the appropriate phrase is, and you know, and put its offering forward. I don't believe it will have much traction, but geez, you know, there's a certain chutzpah to showing up at the strategy meeting of a party that you're going to be opposing. I mean, why doesn't the DA just do that? DA might arrive on time if you believe the account in Tony Leon's book. You know, the other thing, of course, is that this I think has not been coming for a few months. It's been coming since the dawn of democracy. I think it also says something else, that with the ANC not being the undisputed hegemon, its skirts are probably no longer seen as that indispensable to hide behind. I don't know. We shall see.
Yeah, you know, I still do struggle to truly understand why it is that the ANC gives so many privileges to the SACP. There was a time, obviously, in the past when the SACP was the link between the sort of Soviet funding of the ANC and the ANC. There was a time after that when it provided this sort of these more intellectual members and ministers and cabinet people and commentators who kind of backed up the ANC. But increasingly, it just seems more and more like a parasite feeding off of the ANC. So I don't know why they continue to treat it with such reverence within the alliance.
You know, I think it comes down to this mystique that you know, it is the intellectual heartbeat, and I do remember actually speaking to to an ANC legislator at one point, it's probably about 15 years ago, and he said, how could I choose between the ANC and the SACP? They are one, and you know, I'm equally committed to both. I think that could well be the most difficult choice. People who haven't had to make any kind of hard choices, but when it becomes a case maybe of whose trough do you want to eat at? That becomes a difficult one. I think also he has viewed itself as a sort of keeper of transcendental truths, and therefore, you know, has not only a right but a duty to remain, you know, in sort of backroom control of the ANC.
Yes, no, I think that's exactly it. But it is rather strange because, as you say, that the SACP is constantly trying to have its cake and eat it too, in that if it is truly inseparable from the ANC, then why does it continue to exist? Just to be absorbed into it? Or if you are separate, then why do you expect privileges when you oppose the organization from within? Sure. Anyway,
absolutely.
Let's move on to our next one. We're starting to see the first sort of, shots fired, for want of a better metaphor, in Parliament over the DA's coming attack on the ANC, and I think what is basically an attempt to maybe get kicked out of the GNU. The DA had promised that in Parliament it would vote against departmental budgets of what it identified as corrupt ministers. And it began this with the Minister of Higher Education, Minister Nkabane, who is having her departmental budget opposed by the DA, as well as the EFF and MK. The DA's member in the Council of National Council of Provinces, I think this was, said, it's time for President Ramaphosa to fire Minister Nkabane and clean up the ANC's criminal network at the heart of Parliament. Another failure in this minister's dossier. It's a recent scandal involving the appointment of an ANC-connected individuals to the sector, to CETA. The minister brazenly appointed comrades to these crucial roles and acted like they were in employment intending to serve political interests rather than the public good. At the same time, there is reporting that the ANC's National Working Committee says that it is not going to punish the DA for these moves. And in fact, the ANC has also said that it's not going to vote against DA ministers' departmental budgets. Quite interesting. Terence, what do you make of all this?
I think that this is part of the painful and confusing process of learning to cooperate, whose success, I hasten to add, is far from assured. But I do think that the ANC finds itself on what is termed a long slapperim, which means in a precarious position, because yes, you know, they can defend these ministers, but I think there's a lot of tide of elite and popular opinion against this. I mean, we all get very upset about corruption, so you can't. And I think, you know, this is just picture perfect. Bang in front of Parliament, lying. Bang, bang, bang. It's not a good look. I think also the ANC probably has had to rethink its strategy to some extent, and it has to try and appeal to, you know, people beyond its immediate leadership or representatives, you know, to show that, you know, they are the sober and judicious people in the room. Yes, the Andrew Whitfield was all about, sort of breakdown of discipline. The GNU remains very popular, and I don't think either party wants to be the ones who break it. I think that right. will come with censure. Right now, I think it's a jockeying game for people's hearts and minds.
Exactly. And so against that backdrop, I think both sides are essentially trying to get the other one to kick them out in some way. Mm-hmm. The DA wants to be thrown out of its ministerial positions by Ramaphosa being furiously denounced, and the ANC wants the DA to walk off in a huff. And as long as the stalemate continues, I think government is only going to be more and more turned against itself, which is going to be quite a sight to behold. Okay, let us move on to our final story for today. And this is a comment made in Parliament by Correctional Services Minister from the Freedom Front Plus, Peter Groenewald, who suggested that a potential solution to the large number of people awaiting trial in jails for but aren't able to afford bail, that a solution to this problem could be the reimposition of corporal punishment, and is sort of physically punishing people. He said that there are 104,000 inmates in correctional services facilities and they have limited beds. He said about 60,000 remand detainees are awaiting trial. 60,000 people who are in jail because they cannot afford the bail. With about 2,500 of those unable to afford bail amounts of 1,000 rand or less. That is a very grim statistic. Minister Groenewald said, if you look at our criminal justice system, we must start a debate to say, shouldn't we bring back corporal punishment? A young person who steals 10 loaves of bread sits in prison and waits about 3 years for sentencing. Think about whether we should bring back corporal punishment. It was pushed back to this from various parties. But, you know, Terrence, I don't agree with this idea, but I'm very sympathetic to what it's trying to solve here. It's a very real problem that we have so many people sitting in our jails who have not yet faced trial, have not been found guilty of anything, and, you know, some cases just because they're poor, basically. And yet, you know, I don't think corporal punishment will work, partly because, you know, the societies which used to use corporal punishment, I mean, it was very common in the sort of pre-modern world. It was effective because people lived in very closely tight-knit communities and corporal punishment was very humiliating, and it carried a powerful social sanction on top of the sort of actual physical hurt that it caused. I don't think in the modern world that is that all the case. I don't think it would be particularly effective. Also, I'd be curious to know how many people actually have such tiny offenses that people would consider corporal punishment as effectively a justifiable punishment. That being said, I mean, presumably you still have to go to trial to be found guilty of corporal punishment. The courts are not working particularly fast. But Terrence, I'd just like your thoughts on this idea. I mean, you know, how do we solve this problem if not through Minister Groenewald's solution?
Look, I can speak about this with some degree of detached authority, because when I was growing up, that was still a sentence that you go to the magistrate's court, usually for kind of delinquent offences, and you'd be sentenced to a couple of cuts, which would be administered by a police officer. I know it's not actually entirely extinct. So there was a big diplomatic rout in Singapore in the 90s where an American teenager spray painted some cars, and he was sentenced to cuts from a martial arts master with a rattan cane. I imagine the next time he goes and spray paints a car, it's not going to be at Singapore. I think constitutionally this just wouldn't fly. So I think there's just no way. But you know, this is a very real issue, that if someone is sitting in prison for 3 years to be sentenced for stealing a loaf of bread, you know, at the end of those 3 years, do you sentence him to, you know, to be caned? The problem remains is the non-functioning courts. I'm at a loss. I really don't know. There are suggestions for sort of community supervision and that sort of thing. You know, that sort of defund the police type stuff, which maybe would work for non-violent crimes of necessity. I personally think that South Africa's entire crime problem it comes down to this. And I think it was Anthony Altbierker who said, he explained it in his assessment, it's like you go to a party when you're an awkward teenager and no one's dancing. Then one person goes onto the dance floor and starts to groove. And then people feel more and more comfortable. We've just got to a point where everyone's on the crime dance floor. You know, whether that's a case of speeding, driving drunk, or, you know, like going and shooting someone. I have no idea how you deal with it. And this is, you know, look, this is something that, you know, you hear from people from elsewhere in Africa. It's not like they don't have the corrupt governments. They don't have the, you know, like the dysfunctional police forces, you know, the poverty, whatever. What they don't have is the cloying sense of fear. And I think that's because you have stronger social bonds that hold people together. I've heard this from a guy from the DRC. He says, yeah, you know, like people there live with no prospects of, you know, what is available in South Africa, but you don't have a lock on your door because you just, like, people aren't going to break in and, you know, rough you up and steal your stuff. It's just,
I've heard different mindset. I apologies if I'm misremembering the story, but I remember when my mother went to do some work in Ghana. A lot of the local Ghanaians were sort of very perplexed by how anyone can live in South Africa because it's such a violent and crime-ridden place. And Ghana is a society that's quite a lot poorer than ours. It's been doing better in recent years, but, you know, exactly this. Although, you know, I do feel like this issue really highlights how our courts are not working fast enough.
Sure, yeah.
And their capacity massively needs to be increased because you cannot have a situation where people who have not yet been found guilty of anything are sitting in jail for years and years.
Look, you know, I wonder if it wouldn't be possible to sort of, you know, get very minor crimes, you know, pushed through in some sort of, you know, small crimes court sort of, you know, 24-hour shifts. You go testimony and there's some sort of restitutionary sentence, you know, you get to go and, you know, weed the church garden or something like that. But you know, there again, that also organization.
I think Makashula Ghana from the Rise in Zanzi basically suggested something like that in response to this issue.
I anyway, who was sentenced to something like that back in the 90s, and he had to go to a police station. They swept all the dirt to one side of the courtyard, swept it all.
Yeah, no, I feel like one could use people's time better, even if they are being punished. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for watching. We hope you found the show interesting, and we'll be back tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.
Bye-bye.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.